Good morning and welcome to week 7 of our Roman series. Now we're winding this series down. We have one more week left. But before we get there, we still have quite a bit of ground to cover. There's still quite a bit left for us to talk about. And today's passage, it's a passage that is extremely relevant for where we find ourselves right now. Because this is a passage about politics. Yeah, we're going to talk about politics this morning. And I understand for many of you, your anxiety right now, it is through the roof because of politics and because of the season that we're in. My prayer, my hope in looking at this passage is that we would begin to bring that anxiety down a little bit. There are some things that we can't control. And oftentimes anxiety is caused by trying to control the things that are out of our control. So this morning, as we look at Romans 13, let's look at the things that we can control, because there's plenty for us to be anxious about. I understand it. I get it. Plenty for us to be worried about. What's the future going to look like? Where are we going together as a country? Is this going to be a future that is good for me, for my family, for all of us together? I mean, we have all of these questions swirling in the air right now. But hopefully, by looking at the things that we can control, we can bring that anxiety level down a little bit. And this morning, I want to look at Romans 13. And this is a passage that has been, it's caused all sorts of confusion. If you pick up any commentary, you'll notice right away, looking at Romans 13, that there's no clear consensus on exactly what Paul is talking about. There's some things that seem pretty clear. I think there are some things we can say with certainty that Paul was saying this and Paul wasn't saying that. But there's still a lot of discussion being had about these particular verses. And the discussion is good. It's important. It's necessary. Because at face value, a simplistic reading of this text and these verses has caused all sorts of harm throughout the years. Simple readings of this text have caused it to be abused and manipulated and used to defend policies and ways of being, ideologies that are contrary to the things that God desires for us. So this morning, I want to walk you through the passage. I want to show you a couple of things that I believe Paul is saying, some things I don't believe he's saying. I want to look at a couple of ways in which this verse has been misinterpreted. And then I want to offer some practical ways for us to navigate our relationship with the government. And I would argue our relationship with each other, because it's all interconnected. So let's begin by reading Romans 13, verse 1. Everyone must submit himself to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, he who rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from fear of the one in authority? Then do what is right, and he will commend you. For he is God's servant to do you good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword for nothing. He is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. Therefore, it is necessary to submit to the authorities, not only because of possible punishment, but also because of conscience. This is also why you pay taxes, for the authorities are God's servants, who give their full time to governing. Give everyone what you owe him. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. If respect, then respect. If honor, then honor. Maybe you've heard this passage before. Maybe you haven't. Maybe this is the first time that you've read this passage. My guess is this passage comes as a shock. Maybe you're shrinking back a bit. Whoa, what is Paul saying here? Do I like what Paul is saying? Is Paul saying what I think he's saying? Is he saying submit to the governing authorities, blind obedience, whatever they tell you to do, whatever policies they set in place, whatever laws they establish, follow them because they're there because God has put them there. Is that really what Paul is saying? I mean, at a simplistic reading, sure, that's what it seems like. But if we dig a little deeper, if we go under the surface and we look at the things that are swimming around under the surface here, we'll begin to see that there's more going on than that. Let's think back to Romans week 2. And I know, 5 weeks ago, I mean, it's hard enough to remember what you had for dinner last night, let alone the things we talked about 5 weeks ago. Romans week 2, we looked at the beginning of this letter, the first couple of verses of this letter. What we saw when we looked at these verses was a scathing critique Paul had, a critique against the Roman Empire. He basically was saying, yeah, the empire props itself up as an empire of justice and mercy, but in reality, they're an empire of injustice. And their way of establishing order and governing stands in direct opposition to the way of Jesus. I mean, Paul belittles the Caesar by saying, I know you've heard it said that Caesar is Lord, but I'm here to tell you there's a new sheriff in town. There's a different Lord to pledge your allegiance to. It's not Caesar in his way of injustice. Rather, it's Jesus in his way of true justice and mercy. So can we have Paul critiquing, and by critiquing, I mean strongly critiquing the Roman Empire right in the beginning of this letter, moving through the letter to Romans 13, where now we have Paul saying, these guys are great. Listen to them. Follow them. They know exactly what they're doing. They're going to lead you down the path of following Jesus. I mean, these, they don't add up. There has to be something else going on here. And then what about Paul's life? I mean, if we know anything about Paul's life, Paul's been arrested multiple times. He has suffered floggings, all because he's resisted. He hasn't taken his own advice here. He has not submitted. And then after writing Romans, Paul is going to be arrested, tried, and then beheaded by the Roman Empire. Why? Because he didn't submit. Because he didn't take his own advice. So did Paul just have kind of a weird moment where he went on a tangent? Maybe someone put something weird in his drink that night that he was writing at Romans 13? Clearly, there has to be more going on here. So let's look at two things that I believe Paul is saying right here in these verses. First, Paul is arguing for the necessity of structure and order. Paul is saying structure, order, great thing. Really, really good thing. Paul's saying politics, it's a good thing. Because politics, it's all about how we govern our shared life. How is it that we organize our shared life together? So politics, it's a good thing. It's necessary. It's important. We have to figure out, we have to put certain policies and laws in place so that we can govern our shared common life. Now, Paul believes that politics, order, structure, the reason why they're a necessity is because we need to ensure the mutual flourishing of all people. Here's Romans 13, verse 4. Paul says, for he, in speaking about the governing authority, he is God's servant to do you good. What's the role of the government? To do you good. Any government. The role of the Roman Empire was to do you good. The role of the American government, to do good. And when Paul says you, he doesn't mean you simply you. He means you, all of us. The role of any government is to do good for its people. This was true of the Roman Empire. It's true for the American government that we all live under today. Every government, their purpose is to create a society that is just. This has a long, long biblical tradition. The king, the governing authority, was believed to be the one who was to embody and protect justice. Now here's Proverbs chapter 29, verse 4. By justice, a king gives a country stability. Obviously, by the time of, well, you had a Caesar, but now we don't have kings anymore. So what's the role of any governing authority? Whenever a governing authority leads us into justice, we have a country that is stable. We have a land that is stable. Justice is the thing that every government should be after. So what is Paul not saying? If Paul's saying those things, Paul is saying structure, good, role of government to do good. Paul is then, on the flip side of it, he's not saying blind obedience. He's not saying full submission, just follow in line. He's not saying never resist. He is not saying the government is always right and always follows the way of Jesus. Just because he says the role of the government is to do good, he's not then saying the Roman Empire is doing good for everyone. So he kind of sets up this grand argument where he says, hey, yeah, let me talk about the government. Let me talk about the Roman Empire and how you're to navigate your relationship with the Roman Empire. The purpose, the reason why they're in place is because they are supposed to be doing good for everyone. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're actually doing that. In reality, the Roman Empire was a place of injustice, a place where people were being harmed. Now, unfortunately, what has happened throughout the years is people have used these verses as a way to justify the very things that Paul is not saying. It's been used in ways to actually oppose the good that Paul says is to be the role of any government. So let's look at the history. 1850, the Fugitive Slave Act. This act declared that if there are any runaway slaves, they must be returned to their masters. Even if these slaves have made it to a free state, a state that doesn't allow slavery, the people of that state have to track this slave down, find this slave, or if they find him, they have to find out where the slave came from and return him. And it was actually the role of the government who was responsible to make sure that all runaway slaves were returned back to their masters. Romans 13 was quoted by anti-abolitionists, people who were pro-slavery, people who were for slavery. They quoted Romans 13 and said, hey, the government has been established by God. It's put here in order to lead us. Don't oppose the government. Make sure that you follow their laws and return runaway slaves. Now, you had people who were on the other side of this argument, and they believed that they should be protecting runaway slaves. They should not be returning them. They should not return them back to slavery, but they should set them free. They were the ones who were doing good. I mean, for all of us today, no one is going to say slavery was a good thing. We're all going to oppose it and say it was wrong. Yet Romans 13 was used, as many other passages in the Bible have been used. Romans 13 was used to justify slavery and the harmful, harmful act of returning runaway slaves to their masters. It was Romans 13 quoted by those anti-abolitionists saying, the government's here by God, so you must listen to them, even if it goes against the things that you believe in. During the rise of the Nazi Party, Romans 13, quoted by German Christians in order to defend and support Hitler's policies. German Christians quoted Romans 13 in order to say, Hitler's the one in power. He's the governing authority. God has placed him here. So you must submit to him. You must follow wherever he leads us. Then in 2018, Romans 13 was quoted by the Attorney General of the time, Jeffrey Sessions in order to defend the administration's harmful immigration policy. Policy of forcibly separating children and parents at the border. Romans 13 was quoted as a way to say, this is what the government has set in place. God has established us as the governing authorities, and whatever we say goes. Whatever we say is God's law. Whatever we say is the words of God. Romans 13 quoted as a way to defend this evil, harmful, destructive act. Yeah, during all three examples, the people quoting Romans 13, no one decided to look at verse 4, which the role is to do good and to not do harm to people. See, what often happens when we abuse passages of the Bible is we rip passages out of their larger context, the larger story. We remove them, and they just become this disconnected text that isn't connected to the larger argument or the larger story that is being told. In Romans 13, there is a larger story going on than simply these seven verses that we read. We read these seven verses, but there's a context for these verses. There's something bigger going on here than just these seven verses. What these seven verses are bookended by, they're bookended by Paul talking all about love. Here's chapter 12 that comes right before the verses we read. Verse 17, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends. In verse 20, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Yeah, I mean, right before Romans 13, Paul's talking about doing good, loving, even loving those who oppose you, people who appear to be your enemy. Evil isn't overcome with more evil. Violence doesn't bring peace. It's love that brings peace to the land. I mean, verse 18, if it is possible, and again, talking about the things that we can control, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, do everything within your power to live at peace with everyone. Don't go looking for a fight. Don't go and start an argument. Don't widen the gap. Do everything within your power to live at peace. Paul's telling these Christians, be people of peace. Don't go looking for a fight. And then verse 13, right after the seven verses we just read, this is 13 verse 8. Let no debt remain outstanding. I love this. Except the continuing debt to love one another. There is this endless debt we all have to love. How should you set your life up? To love. I mean, is this not a theme that we have seen all throughout Romans during these past 7 weeks? And then it continues here, verse 10, 13, verse 10. Love does no harm to its neighbor. 2018, Jeff Sessions. This is the law, separating parents, children. This is the immigration policy that we have established. Yeah, what happened to verse 10? Love does no harm to its neighbor. Yeah, conveniently forgot to mention that one. Conveniently decided to leave that one out. Yeah, we pick and choose all the time. We pick and choose the verses that we want to throw out there, that we want to spew on other people, but we miss the larger context. What's the role of the government? To do good. What's the role of all the people living within that government? To love. To love. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love. Live at peace with all people. See, if we understand Romans 13 within that context, within that larger story, now we're getting somewhere. Now we're getting to the heart of the thing that Paul is really saying and what he's talking about. He's not using this to just simply allow the government to defend all the harm that they're doing. No, no, no. There's something bigger, broader, deeper going on here. What Paul is saying, as followers of Jesus, we are to be people of love all the time, even when we come across those who are doing harm. We are to respond with love. We're not to continue this spiral of violence. We're not to bring things further down, but rather we're to be people of love, of healing, people who embody love in every moment of our lives. What Paul is saying here is, don't go looking for a fight. Don't be an instigator. He's saying, in the taxes reference, don't resort to violence. There were plenty of people. They were irritated, that's to put it mildly, by the Roman taxes. They wanted to start riots. They wanted to fight back. Paul's saying, don't do that. Don't be that way. In truth, what Paul's saying here, maybe this is a reason, I mean, commentators speculate this is a reason why Paul isn't more forceful and why he's a bit more cryptic right here, is because Paul didn't want to bring the wrath of the Roman Empire on the Christians. They were a small group of people. Imagine this small ragtag group of people going up against the forceful Roman military. I mean, this global military superpower. Paul's saying, hey, just live at peace. Live at peace. It's not going to end well for you. Paul's saying, do your best to live peaceably and justly wherever you find yourself. Maybe your anxiety is really high right now. I get it. I understand it. Yeah, there's a lot that's happening. There's a lot that's at stake. But can you, in your life, can you do everything within your power to live at peace with people? Even those that won't be voting the same way that you vote? Can you do everything within your power to create a world of justice? A world where everyone is heard? I mean, these are things that we can control. These are the things that they alleviate some of that anxiety because we can control them to a certain degree. And this is what Paul is saying. Like, yeah, your relationship with the Roman Empire, it's going to always be messy because the Roman Empire stands, it's the very contrast to the way of Jesus and the way that you're trying to live your life. It's going to always be messy. So let's just acknowledge the messiness and let's just control what we can control and try to live at peace and try to embody love in every moment. And what Paul's doing here, he is channeling the prophet Jeremiah. Jeremiah, when he speaks to the exiled Israelites, after they have been forcibly removed from their land by the Babylonians, when they're living in a foreign land, when they're living in Babylon with their captors, the people that removed them from the land, Jeremiah says, you're going to be here a while. While you're here, build houses, plant gardens, seek the welfare of the city. I mean, how revolutionary is that? The Israelites have just been devastated. Their lives have been ruined. And now Jeremiah comes with a message of, hey, seek the welfare of all people, including the people that have done you harm. I mean, it's exactly what Paul is saying here. Seek the mutual flourishing of all people. People within your community, your tribe, but the people that are beyond your tribe, even the people who disagree with you, even the people who are opposed to you. There was when I was growing up, one of my favorite punk bands, Midtown, had an album. And the album title, one of my all-time favorite album titles, Living Well is the Best Revenge. I love that title. Living Well is the Best Revenge. If Paul had a caption for what he's writing here in these couple of verses, I believe the caption would be, Living Well is the Best Critique. Because that's exactly what he's telling these Christ followers. By living well, by embodying love, you will expose the injustice of the Roman Empire. By your actions, you will expose the evil, the corruption, the injustice that this empire you're living under is enacting all around you. I mean, right here, chapter 12, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. This isn't conventional wisdom. If your enemy is hungry, you leave him to die of starvation. If your enemy is thirsty, you leave him in the desert without a drip of water. And Paul, yet Paul says, hey, if he's hungry, feed him. If she's thirsty, get her a drink. Be compassionate. Don't repay evil with evil. He says, in doing this, as you love even your enemy, you will heap burning coals on his head. In other words, as you love your enemy, their injustice, it's going to be exposed. You're going to expose them for who they are. Yeah, what's the way to move this world forward? It's not to fight violence with violence. It's not to get even. It's not to seek revenge. It's by love. Love is what heals. This is like the common message of Romans all the way from the start. There's this thread of love we see all throughout. This is what we see embodied in Jesus. Jesus was, for Paul, the center of all of it. Embodied in Jesus was love, sacrifice, nonviolence. How does Jesus save the world? Not with the sword. That's how Caesar saves the world. Jesus saves with a different way. We've all seen how the way of Caesar brings great harm and evil for people. It doesn't seek the well-being of all people. We've all seen it. The way of Jesus, it's a different way. This is a way that truly cares for all people. And it's a way that is embodied by love. So when we get to Romans 13, Paul doesn't take a detour. He doesn't forget his train of thought. He doesn't forget what he's been saying all throughout the letter of Romans. But rather, Paul is saying everything that he's been saying from the beginning. Yeah, the Roman Empire, not following the way of Christ. You're not going to overcome them. So don't even try. Plus, that's not the best way anyway. That's not the way that leads to true life. So with what you can control, with your lives, be people of love, of compassion. By doing that, by embodying that way of living in the world, that's going to be the best critique. Others will be drawn into your community as they see your way of living. As they say, your way of living is bringing true healing to the world instead of this so-called healing and salvation that Caesar is bringing to the world. By being a community of love and extending love and living at peace as much as possible with people, others will be drawn to your path because they will see the life that is in that path. They will see the salvation, the true salvation that is found in walking that path. So this week, may you be a person of love. My prayer for you is that if you're feeling any anxiety at the moment, that anxiety would begin to alleviate. It would decrease. That you would look around and that you would control simply that which you can control. There's a lot out there we can't control. May you entrust all of that to God. And may you control how you treat others. May you have keen insight into the type of life that you are embodying this week. May you do everything within your power to live at peace, to move all of us forward into greater justice. May you be a person of compassion and mercy. And may your life, may living that path, the path of Jesus, may it critique all those other paths, those paths of injustice, of corruption, of evil. May it expose them for what they are, illusions on the road to salvation. May grace and peace be upon you this week. Amen.